Sitting at the wheel. Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Hillary Clinton's about to give her victory speech. We may take some of this. According to Terry McAuliffe, it is the greatest speech ever. Let's listen to a little bit of this, if we can, here, Catherine.
Like the song says, it's almost heaven. And I am so grateful for this overwhelming vote of confidence. Now, there are some who have wanted to cut this race short.
No! No!
They say give up. It's too hard.
No!
The mountain is too high.
Oh, Lordy.
But here in West Virginia, you know a thing or two about rough roads to the top of the mountain.
Rough roads to the top of the mountain. Amen and amen. I'm breaking out in cold chills here.
That faith can move mountains.
Oh, the Bible.
And my friends, the faith of the mountain state has moved me.
Ah!
More determined than ever to carry on this campaign.
Yeah! You go, girl!
Until everyone has had a chance to make their voices heard. I want to commend Senator Obama and his supporters. This continues to be a hard-fought race from one end of our country to the other. And yes, we've had a few dust-ups along the way.
Oh!
But our commitment to bring America new leadership,
yeah,
that will renew America's promise.
Thank you, Jesus. Yeah.
Means that we have always stood together on what is most important.
Yeah.
Now tonight,
hey,
tonight I need your help
and
to
your
continue
money.
This journey.
All right, that's enough. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. The first couple of minutes there, the most important speech ever, according to Terry McAuliffe. I don't know about you, but I just wasn't completely... Did you get any goosebumps from that, Kathy?
Oh, look, she's wearing a kind of a pink pantsuit and a large
all
necklace.
All right. You are just so cynical.
Oh, look at the audience. Now, no offense to West Virginia, but I don't see any black people.
There's
Do you
one,
see?
Yeah, down there in the corner, the left-hand corner
is
of your
there
screen.
One? Oh.
Yeah, see, there he is in the yellow shirt.
I wonder how much they paid him to be there.
Oh, you cynic. You are so bad. Here in Atlanta, the race thing is really coming out. It's going to come out like cockroaches in a southern kitchen at 3 o'clock in the morning when you stumble downstairs to get a glass of bicarbonate, flip on the light switch. Oops, don't do that, especially if you left a skillet full of bacon drippings out. Hell no, don't turn on that light. But the white races are coming out like cockroaches all over here in the Atlanta area, up in Marietta, Georgia, which is racist, bigot central in the southeastern UA, maybe the entire US of A, maybe in the entire eastern half of the United States. But there's a guy up there who does talk like this, and he's got one of them birds and long hair and rides a motorcycle. I seen it on the TV. But he's selling a T-shirt up there at his store that has a monkey on it, and the monkey looks like Curious George, the TV cartoon. Now, I know about that because my little daughter watches Curious George, and this boy put together a T-shirt with a monkey, Curious George, eating a banana. And the slogan underneath it is Obama in 08. Isn't that a goddamn knee slapper here in the South, huh? Doesn't that make you, hell yeah, the South to rise again. Some bitch, you better believe it. Yeah! And then this fool goes on the TV and says, no, it's not racist. Says he thinks Obama really looks like Curious George, that cartoon figure. He does. That's what he said on the TV. He did. He said, well, you know, I was watching the TV the other day, and I saw Curious George. Imagine this sumbitch watching the kids' TV show. Yep, he sure was. And I seen him, and by God, it looked like, what's his name, the Negro fella. And I just figured I'd make a T-shirt. I ain't got nothing against white colored folk. this guy is the reason I carry a gun. Now, I have some more on this later on the race thing here in the South, but I'll tell you what, in Mississippi, they're doing it. They tried to do it in Louisiana, but it didn't work. But the thing here in Atlanta, granted, Atlanta, the ATL is a black city. It's a black mecca of education, entertainment, art. But you get 10 feet outside of Atlanta, there's a perimeter highway that goes around the city, the Beltway. Up north they call it the Beltway. Down here we call it the perimeter because we're dumb down here. We call it perimeter. That's a perimeter highway. It goes. You get outside the perimeter, and you're in Georgia, where these kind of people, huh, he looked like Curious George. Hell, I ain't no racist. I've had niggers work for me for a long time. But you know what? I had to come up with that T-shirt, Obama 08, underneath that monkey eating that nanner. Yeah, hell yeah, I think that's funny. Y'all think it's funny? Huh? Don't y'all think it's, huh? You all think, you see? My boys all say it's funny. I live in the South. Well, the giggling killer, that's going to be me. One of these days that's going to happen to me, you know, because I am armed. And here in Georgia now, there is a, did that law pass, Kathy? I think the Georgia General Assembly, if you feel threatened, you can shoot somebody here in Georgia now. If you just feel threatened, you don't have to see a weapon.
Well, Sonny Perdue is our governor.
Yeah, Sonny Perdue.
So nothing would surprise. Well, the man that prays for rain as he sends the first victim off to be executed in the country after the Supreme Court rule. It's like, God, let it rain. Hey, kill this guy, will you?
It's crazy here. It's crazy here. But see, I will probably wind up a giggling killer if I ever have to drill one of these people for approaching me or my child or my wife or my mind or my political beliefs. And have to put a slug right through his forehead. I'm just going to have to stand there and giggle about it and say, oh, damn, I never thought that law here in Georgia would apply to me. I felt threatened by him. It is legal here in Georgia to shoot somebody if you feel threatened, not if you see a weapon. Not if somebody's attacking you. Not if somebody's in your house at 3 a.m, although that all works too. Of course, that'd scare them out. As soon as they saw that pan of bacon drippings with all the roaches running around, they'd run like hell. But in addition to all that, if you feel that someone is threatening you here in Georgia, you can kill them. And that is a defense. You may be charged with manslaughter, but that is your defense. There it is, because it's state law now. But I digress. The real giggling killer, the one that's responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people, George W. Bush, gave an interview to Mike Allen of Politico.com last Wednesday. And somehow we missed it. But we've got it tonight. What do we have for you? The worst quote ever by the worst president ever. You got to hear why George W. Bush no longer plays golf. Now, when we come back from this break, we're going to play it for you. The giggling killer has indeed shown his care and concern for the families who made the ultimate sacrifice in his illegal endless oil war. Wait till you hear what he's done. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Yeah! You say it's her T-shirt? Dark and dusty. Say it's a monkey eating this here banana? Hot damn! It drops in my eyes. Country roads, take me home. Rock and roll, West Virginia.
subliminable messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
See, I got this here T-shirt I made down here. It's got that Curious George little monkey character there sitting there eating a nanner. And underneath it, it says Obama 08. Hot damn. Isn't that a knee slapper? What you think, boys? Huh? Already asked you all that. Damn.
And the gentleman in question who designed the T-shirt would have made it fried chicken or a watermelon, but he wasn't any good at Photoshop, so he had to just lift it straight from the PBS site. Well, trust me, that would have either been a chicken wang or a slice of watermelon.
Back in 2002, in August, when this punk-ass president was on a golf course in Kennebunkport with his pappy and his mammy and whatever other people he could get together, he gave a little cold-hearted exchange with a reporter. I don't know if you remember it. Bush was standing there taking some questions from this ass-whipped press. He had his driver in his gloved hand. He took time to comment to these reporters about an overnight suicide bombing of a bus in Israel that killed at least 9 people. Now, until the interview last Wednesday, I thought this was the most heartless golf scene imaginable.
We must stop the terror. I call upon all nations to do everything they can to stop these terrorist killers. Thank you. Now watch this drive.
Now watch this drive. Without the slightest pause, Chuckle Nuts turned to his game and hit his first ball into the rough. This filthy pig. Now, you may have thought, you know, I thought, well, you animal, you subhuman. But listen to this. Here's an interview last Wednesday with Mike Allen, chief political correspondent for Politico.com. This was an online interview that went up at Yahoo. Lost, you might say, in the whirlwind of this unending Democratic primary season was this little tidbit from Raisin Brain last week. Listen to the executioner-in-chief here explain why he just can't play golf anymore.
Mr. President, you haven't been golfing in recent years. Is that related to Iraq?
Yeah, it really is. I don't want some mom whose son may have recently died to see the commander-in-chief playing golf. I feel I owe it to the families to be as, you know, to be in solidarity as best as I can with them. And I think, you know, playing golf during a war, it just sends the wrong signal.
Mr. President, was there a particular moment or incident that brought you to that decision, or how did you come to that?
No, you know, I remember when DeMello, who was of the UN, got killed in Baghdad as a result of these murderers taking this good man's life, and I was playing golf. I think it was in Central Texas, and they pulled me off the golf course, and I said, it's just not worth it anymore to do that.
There you go. Now, this is at vetvoice.com. If you want to hear this over and over, if you want to play this video, this audio, or the video over and over again, the entire interview is there. The giggling killer has shown his care and concern for the families who made up the ultimate sacrifice in his illegal, endless oil war. He stopped golfing. You know, if I didn't hate this son of a bitch up to today when I heard this, it's all over. My military correspondent sent me this. She included, "I think it's best that I not comment on this." Signed, Sharon. I can understand, sweetheart. At Vet Voice, they say with the ghosts of Washington, Lincoln, Roosevelt, and Eisenhower looking down, Bush finally admitted today that he has been touched by the true cost of war. For the first time, Bush revealed in a personal way how he has tried to acknowledge the sacrifice of soldiers and their families. He has given up golf. In unity and spirit with Americans who will never see a child or a parent again on account of his policies, Bush made the heart-wrenching decision to take a hiatus from the game. He chose to make this sacrifice several months after the invasion of Iraq, when Sergio Vieira de Mello, a top UN official in Iraq, was killed in a bombing. In a just world, words like Bush's would cause our nation's capital to come to a screeching halt. Halt, but not in today's America. In today's world, sacrifice is designed in terms of not being able to afford a Hummer, of having to see a few images of war on TV, and of giving up golf. If past commanders-in-chief were alive, VetVoice.com writes, they'd retch at such a statement from this so-called leader. Imagine Washington at Valley Forge, Lincoln on the eve of the Civil War, Truman, August 45, and then listen to this blank. I don't know why I can't say that word on the air, but I can't. We'll play it for you again a little bit later. So there you go. I don't want some mom whose son may have recently died, you know, see the commander-in-chief playing golf. That about evens everything out, don't you think?
On the other hand, I think most Americans understand the cause is important and the cause is just.
It's about 25 before the hour. Yeah, I've got to hear this again. Tonight, I don't know, I guess I'm in a very masochistic mood tonight. This is the President of the United States being interviewed by Mike Allen, chief political correspondent for Politico.com, on what Mr. Bush has done to sacrifice, to put himself on the same level as the moms who have given up sons or daughters, the wives who have given up their husbands, the children who will never see their dads again. Listen to this putrid, cowardly bastard.
Mr. President, you haven't been golfing in recent years. Is that related to Iraq?
Yeah, it really is. I don't want some mom whose son may have recently died to see the commander-in-chief playing golf. I feel I owe it to the families to be as, you know, to be in solidarity as best as I can with them. And I think, you know, playing golf during a war, it just sends the wrong signal.
Mr. President, was there a particular moment or incident that brought you to that decision, or how did you come to that?
No, you know, I remember when DeMello, who was of the UN, got killed in Baghdad as a result of these murderers taking this good man's life. And I was playing golf. I think it was in Central Texas, and they pulled me off the golf course, and I said, it's just not worth it anymore to do that.
I don't know. I don't know how the United States can absorb this kind of psychopathic leadership. I just don't get it. Adam in Tampa says, sorry I missed the show last night, but just saw something about Jenna's wedding. Why are neither she nor her new husband not fighting in Iraq? I couldn't help but think about all the weddings that will never happen because of Bush. That's a good question, Adam. Thanks. You know, why isn't Jenna Bush or her twin sister Barbara or the new husband, why aren't they, you know, boxing up the wedding gifts and taking their ass down to the nearest Army recruiter and signing up? It's not their war. George Bush says he says, I feel I owe it to the families to be in solidarity as best I can with them. That's why he gave up golf, to be in solidarity with families who are giving up their sons or their daughters or their husbands or their dads. I think about those pictures I've seen of a 9-year-old little boy sitting at a funeral at a memorial service under the green tent with the Marine approaching and handing the little boy a folded flag. And then I think of what George Bush just said, and the little kid is sitting there crying with just tears streaming down his face, and a 32-year-old widow is sitting next to her holding their 3-year-old daughter. And then I think about George Bush saying, well, you know, I had to be in solidarity with families like that one, so I had to give up golf. Oh, my God. Somebody stop me before I say something that will get me put in Leavenworth. I think it is incumbent to make a quick turn away from this monstrous little bastard. There have been twin horrors hit the Far East, first in Myanmar, now in China. This horrendous cyclone, which has taken tens of thousands of people's lives, and this earthquake now. That the thing that's stunning about the earthquake in China, several times I pointed out, it was so huge that if it happened in the United States, the zone of disturbance would have stretched from, what did they say, Kathy, from Boston to Phoenix? There have been so many people killed in those two countries in the past week or so. It's horrifying. I just can't get my mind around it. I don't know, maybe you can. And the reports I've seen today over and over again about 900 students, high school students, in a collapsed building. And they have found one survivor. And we're going to blow right past this, aren't we? I mean, it just, we're not going to pay any attention to this. You know, we're just not. Well, it's China's problem. Well, it's Myanmar's problem. Well, it's, you know. Whatever it is, it's not my problem. Remember what John Donne said. And we're going to stop this program for a few seconds here. And if you don't mind, just let's be silent for a moment about what has happened in these two countries. Thank you. Coming up a little bit later in the program, a moment with Bob, one of our favorite segments. And I think we have a missive from our writer in residence also. So some stuff on the program tonight. Yesterday, a former senior U.S. official in Iraq, retired Judge Arthur Brennan. He served in 2007 as director of the Office of Accountability and Transparency at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. He testified before a Senate Democratic Policy Committee hearing, at which not a single filthy pig Republican attended. Not one. He accused the State Department of recklessly misleading Americans over the country's plight and contributing to the deaths and maiming of U.S. soldiers. This is one of our guys. Retired Judge Arthur Brennan alleged that poor performance by the department had led, State Department, had led to the loss of billions of dollars. And he warned that some of this missing money is probably funding outlaws or insurgents. He accused the State Department of failing in its mission to stop corruption in Iraq. And he said that the U.S. State Department's policies had instead allowed corruption to fester. Do you remember, Truth Seekers, when these bastards took office in 2000? Do you remember the arrogant, condescending statements that these thugs dished out to the American public? Their secretive actions, the adults were in charge again, they were going to run the country like a corporation. Are you not furious? Former Judge Arthur Brennan, senior U.S. official, State Department, at the testimony yesterday, his voice shaking with emotion, said, quote, "The actual policies and performances of the State Department in Iraq were not what they are represented to be. The State Department has negligently, recklessly, and sometimes intentionally misled the U.S. Congress, the American people, and the people of Iraq. In a sense, the Department of State has contributed to the killing and maiming of U.S. soldiers, the deaths of thousands of Iraqi civilians, the bolstering of illegal militias, insurgents, and al-Qaeda. Billions of U.S. and Iraqi dollars have been lost, stolen, and wasted, and it is likely that some of that money is financing outlaws and insurgents." End quote. Did you see this on any of the news reports yesterday or today, Truth Seeker? You didn't? Neither did I. There was no immediate response to all this from the Shoe Ladies State Department. Brennan went on to say that one unnamed Iraqi leader who was, quote, corrupt and dangerous, end quote, had been involved in a leadership role in a ministry complicit in the abduction, torture, and murder of hundreds of Sunnis in Iraqi medical centers. And Brennan accused the State Department of joining the Iraqi government in ignoring and demeaning the chief judge, the head of the Iraqi Commission for Public Integrity in Baghdad. This is our guy saying this. Did you see any of this on the news? Have you heard anything about this yet? Huh? You know where I got it? From the French news agency.
I have paid my debt, now won't you leave me in my misery? Trouble, trouble, please be kind. I don't want no fight, and I haven't got a lot of time.
Now we're at war, but we're at war to keep the peace.
Let it be, let it be. It's about 10 before the hour. Retired Judge Arthur Brennan, a former senior U.S. official in Iraq, yesterday accused the State Department, Condoleezza Rice, the State Department, of recklessly misleading Americans over the country's plight and contributing to the deaths and maiming of U.S. soldiers. He was the director in 2007 of the Office of Accountability and Transparency at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. He was testifying before a Senate Democratic Policy Committee hearing, where not a single filthy, scum-sucking Republican decided to attend. He said, quote, in a sense, the Department of State, Condoleezza Rice's outfit, has contributed to the killing and maiming of U.S. soldiers, the deaths of thousands of Iraqi civilians, the bolstering of illegal militias, insurgents, and al-Qaeda. Billions of U.S. and Iraqi dollars have been lost, stolen, and wasted. Just never stops, does it, Truth Seeker? Huh? What is it? Hillary Clinton is declaring victory the whole presidency now, is she, Kathy? By the way, this hearing at which retired Judge Arthur Brennan testified comes during this, this week. They're having congressional hearings on funding for the continuation of this filthy, murderous occupation. The Democrats are going to collapse. You know that as well as I do. This pig in the White House will get his money, will get his billions and billions and billions to make sure that more people die. This bloodthirsty bastard has not had his fill yet, and neither has Dick Cheney. They're going to run this right up into the next presidency. They don't care. And the Democrats in Congress who could stop this goddamn thing tomorrow if they wanted to. The Democrats could stop it tomorrow. But they are cowards. They are the other half of this miserable corporate political coin that I am so sick of flipping. Aren't you? Who's it going to be? The Democrat? The Republican? Doesn't matter. Oh, that's right. It really matters because a Republican could appoint a Supreme Court justice who will wipe out the balance of power. Hey, Sparky, who confirmed Alito and Roberts? Eh? Who could have stopped those two Nazis? That's right. The Democrats. And they didn't. You know, I'm really pissed off tonight. I'm beyond pissed off. That comment by Bush about he gave up his golf game to put him on a par with families who have seen their sons and fathers and daughters and moms and fathers murdered in his goddamn war. That comment has just torn it for me tonight. And if it hasn't for you, sit down, take your pulse, and call 911. Because if you're not pissed off after hearing that, I don't know, maybe you're dead? But the Democrats are going to go ahead and give this psychopath another, what, $70 billion, $110 billion? They're not going to change. And do you think, let me ask you, Truth Seeker, straight up, come on, look me in the eye. Do you think Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or John McCain, any one of those three, is going to change the policy? Do you think when any one of those three becomes president, he or she will walk over to the Senate and say, stop this goddamn thing now? Do you think that's going to happen? Do you? No, because there's all kinds of reasons why we can't stop it. Everything from the Pottery Barn rule, whoever made that up ought to be taken out and horsewhipped, to the fact that if we leave, there's going to be a bloodbath. What the hell is it now? Do you think that President Obama or President Hillary Clinton is going to walk into the Senate, call for a joint session, and say, my fellow Americans, this has to stop now? Do you think that's going to happen? No, you don't. And why don't you think that? Because you know it won't. So even when a former federal judge who served over there, in the interest of this corrupt Bush administration, even when he comes back, and these filthy Republicans don't even show up for the hearing, and this guy says, look, murder, mayhem, fraud, theft, lies, deceit against the American people, against the Iraqi people, against everybody. What do you think happens? The media do not report it, and the Democrats will continue to fund it. You know it. I know it. This is where we are. This is where we are. Who wrote this? Stark writes this in Sacramento. Mike, there sure must be a whole bunch of homosexuals in Burma and China to deserve this natural retribution like Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. Yeah, I hear you, Stark. I can't wait for Pastor Hagee to suggest that. We'll be back after the break. Let me see if I can calm down. Let me go get some of superbeans.com coffee. No, I drink coffee to calm down. I know. Very few people can do that. But I have a tendency to make coffee nervous. Super Beans, here I come! Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. A little Super Beans coffee here in my coffee cup, and I feel a little bit better. Whew. Oh, by the way, regarding that story about former Judge Brennan blowing the whistle on Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell State Department, and how corrupt it is, how utterly and absolutely corrupt it is, condoning, encouraging torture. It's mind-boggling. But if you think that story, as gruesome, as horrifying, as un-American as it is, as counterproductive to any of our interests anywhere in the United States, as bad or anywhere in the world, as bad as that story is, there's much, much more. And where do you go to get it? Where do you go? Let me tell you where to go. Okay? Write this down. TV News Lies. TVNewsLies.org. Just go there. Take a look at their latest news at a glance section. Jesus, God. TVNewsLies.org. Just go to that website. And you ought to go every day. TVNewsLies.org. Just go there. Well, I don't know. You got to have a strong constitution if you're going to do it. Now, getting back to how the Republicans and the Clinton campaign have decided to pull out all the stops on race. The Republicans in the South are going to use the N-word and pictures of monkeys eating bananas as often as they damn well please, because this is the South. When they give the world an enema, or when they give the United States an enema, this is where they're going to stick the tube, here in the South, probably in Mississippi. Mississippi is arguably the most corrupt, putrid state in America. Now, are there pockets of decent folk? Of course. But you know what I'm talking about. So in Mississippi, there is a race, special election, today. The election was today. Don't know the results yet. And the Republicans in this in the very white and very conservative district, this is for the House, are trying to make the vote more a referendum on Senator Barack Obama's race than on the candidates themselves. Republicans have repeatedly associated Travis Childers, he's the white Democrat threatening to take the seat away from the Republican Party. The Republicans in there, they've even sent Dick Cheney, the murderous bastard Cheney down there. But if you look at some of the ads and listen to some of the comments in Mississippi about Barack Obama, there's no holds barred. It's a throwback to the politics of race, which has always been part of Mississippi campaigning, always. The white citizens' councils that existed down there in the 50s and the 60s. I have spent more time in Mississippi and Alabama and South Carolina than I could, and Georgia, for that matter. I mean, I don't know why I've done it. I don't know why I've stayed here. Former Governor William Winter of Mississippi, a Democrat, said he's shocked at the current campaign. I believe him. He said, I'm appalled that this blatant appeal to racial prejudice is still being employed. Now, Winter, a white guy, has a history. He lost the 1967 governor's race after his opponent, who was a strict segregationist, circulated little handbills showing black folk listening to one of Winter's speeches. That's all it took. Look here, these niggers are listening to this boy give a speech. Some bitch, you want him in the governor's mansion? Why, hell no! And it worked. Now, 12 years later, William Winter went on to win the governor's office. Winter said, I thought we had gotten past this. This was a tactic that was used against me in the 1960s. I'm telling you, it's coming. And you know this. You know this. Black folk know this automatically about what's going to happen in terms of going after Barack Obama, hoping that there's no violence. White people are starting to get it. White Democrats are starting to understand. You know, for a few shining months, white people in this country, especially those who are backing Barack Obama, probably had a fleeting idea. Wow, I know I did. Wow, maybe we've gotten past the race thing enough to keep the N-word out of the campaign and no monkeys eating bananas and just go for the high road. But no, that's not the case. This filth that is in the soul of America is just sitting there waiting till the right moment. And the right moment is just around the corner. Hillary and Bill Clinton and Terry McAuliffe's snotty, coded remarks about white working class people and the real white racists in this country who are just waiting to unleash this torrent of hell against Barack Obama because he happens to be of African descent. Yeah, you remember, he's got a black dad and a white mom. Ooh, son of a bitch, we can't have any of that! Back to Mississippi, the Republican candidate for this congressional seat says in an interview, well, I'm not raising racial issues. No, I'm just trying to point out that, you know, the conservative values here in South Haven, Mississippi, and the fact that I'm a Republican, I know I talk like I got a mouth full of okra, but you know that's just how we talk here in Mississippi. And I'm not insinuating that because my opponent hangs out with with Barack Obama, I'm not insinuating that he likes niggers any more than anybody. Hell, I like niggers. I've worked with him a long time. But you know what? That's not what I'm insinuating. I'm just saying that, you know, my values are what Mississippians, real Mississippians, are all about. Not Barack what's his name? Osama Obama? Isn't that funny? I just made a joke. Oh, God. And even though, when was it, excuse me, last, There was a special election in Louisiana last week, and that tactic didn't work, and the Democrat won. But Louisiana is not Mississippi. There are signs in Mississippi that it is working. It is working. Now, the problem here, this is a district with a comparatively smaller black population than in the district in Louisiana. About 26% of the voting population is African American. And, of course, these are the people who get the phone calls at 10 o'clock at night saying, you know, if you ever had a traffic ticket, you can't vote. You can't vote today. The Associated Press, or New York Times, I'm sorry, interviewed a couple of people in that district, white people. James Wiggins, shopping at a nearby gun show, said he saw a connection between the two Democrats, the white one and the black one. He's Mr. Wiggins, looking for a gun. Mr. Wiggins says, well, you know, I don't agree with the liberal viewpoint, and he's as liberal as they get. He is. You know, the dark one. I don't know. And now, having kicked Mississippi's ass all around the map here for the past 10 minutes, wait till I tell you about Indiana, which I will do when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Hey, you know something, people? I'm not black, but there's a whole lot of times I wish I could say I'm not white. But I've seen the fires burning and the local people turning on the merchants and the shops who used to sell their brooms and mops and every other household item. Watch a mob just turn and bite them, and they say it served them right because a few of them were white. And it's the same across the nation, black and white discrimination. And you can't understand me and all that other jazz they hand me in the papers and TV and all that mass stupidity that seems to grow more every day. Each time you hear something we say, you want to go and do your in.
We've got great hearts and great compassion about our fellow human men and women.
Oh. 21 past the hour. Excuse me, Eric. Pardon me, Eric in New York, right in Manhattan, writes, Mike, while I'm hardly surprised that Judge Arthur Brennan's testimony didn't make a ripple in the American press, I'm sad that I can't even find it on C-SPAN. They did, however, find time in their schedule to cover First Lady Laura Bush's remarks at the Preserve America Presidential Awards ceremony in the East Room of the White House. This while her husband is doing his damnedest to destroy America. From Bridget, Mike, when I hear things like the quote from Bush about his golf game, they are so over the top, they fall into the abyss of completely unbelievable. And I end up either punching walls, not good for walls or hands, or dropping into a hopelessness that no amount of antidepressants can touch. I realized something today, Bridget writes, listening to a caller on the Jeff Farias program. Young adults, those under 35 or so, have never seen a political world that wasn't hopelessly corrupt, completely self-serving, unfeeling, and completely divorced from those of us who supposedly are who this republic is of, by, and for. All they have known politically is the Bush mafia and the lynching of a president for a bit of oral sex. They have no clue that government can actually serve people, that there is such a thing as the public good, the commons, community. How do we restore that dream when the generation coming into its own politically has no concept of the possibility of that dream. Yeah, that's a good point, and I've heard that point made before, that if you take a look at, say, people who right now are, well, Bridget says it, 35, they're 8 years old when Reagan was first elected. So all they have known is the corruption of Reagan and the Republicans, the Iran-Contra scandal, trading with the enemy, hostages, the corruption of George W. Bush, more Iran-Contra, drug running, the triangulation of Bill Clinton for 8 years, and the sending abroad of American jobs, the destruction of our economy, except for a favored few who then saw everything disappear in the tech collapse towards the end of the last decade. And then this pig, George Bush. I don't know how people are inspired to go to the polls. I guess that's what Barack Obama is doing. And Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is getting the, what is it the pundits keep telling us? Women, older people, people with not too much education, people who are unemployed. What is Obama getting? Young people, college educated. So maybe the inspiration that both Clinton and Obama, no matter what that inspiration is, at this point doesn't matter. Does it really matter? But maybe getting the people inspired to the point where they'll go to the polls, maybe that's a good sign. But I don't think so. But then again, I have become such a cynic about all this that, I don't know, sometimes it's just almost impossible to keep that little bit of hope alive that I always thought, hey, Malloy, you don't have a damn thing, but by God, you got a lot of hope, boy. Yeah. Bob Kincaid at headonradio.com, one of our colleagues, says, Mike, I'm sure you're as sick of the primary wrestling match as I am, but I couldn't resist sharing this little fact with you. Bob's in West Virginia. Exit polling data here in the wild, wonderful, racist West Virginia indicates that 20% of the people who voted for Hillary did so because she's white. Did so because she's white. Well, Bob, it's good that only 20% of them. Of course, those are the only ones that will fess up. Bob continues, wish I was kidding, almighty God, I wish I was kidding. I'm not. I'm sick, Mike. Moments like this make me think that everything that happens to this poor, benighted, pathetic state is entirely deserved. Bob. If you haven't gone to headonradio.com, you ought to check him out. Well, Mike, he's a competitor. No, he's not. He is part of the landscape of progressive talk radio, and you should go listen once in a while. Not when we're on, but you know, some other time. I'm sorry, Bob. Head on, as in collision, headonradio.com. Check him out, Bob Kincaid. Good guy. Oh, yeah, Indiana. Indiana and race. We'll take a look at that when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Well, what do you know? The white Democrat, Travis Childers, kicked the white Republican's ass, Greg Davis, in the Mississippi district I was talking about earlier, which doesn't change my attitude one iota about racism in the South or any place in America. At the same time, I'm seeing stuff here the white women in West Virginia voted for Hillary by a ratio of 3-1 over Obama. White men voted for Hillary by a ratio of 2-1 over Obama. But in Mississippi, and a couple of you sent this to me, Sheila and Paul and a few other people, apparently the white Democrat has won. In Republican territory, I mean, this is deep Mississippi. Now, this is the third time. This is the third special election for a U.S. House seat this year. In a seat that was held by a Republican. Dennis Hastert in Illinois. Richard Baker in Louisiana. And now this one to replace the guy who took over Trent Lott's seat. Drawing a blank on his name. So for the third time in a row, a Democrat has won in a heretofore solidly Republican House district. Do you think there's a chance? Now, granted, Travis Childers in Mississippi is what's referred to as a conservative Democrat. Probably one of them blue dogs we were talking about the other night. But at this point, it really doesn't matter a whole lot to me one way or the other, as long as, and it sounds like a complete contradiction about what I said earlier, and it probably is, but I'll say it anyway. As long as these filthy Republicans are removed from office permanently, they cannot govern. All they can do is destroy. They are thugs. They're vermin. They're parasites on this country. The Republican Party has got to be retired. It has to be moved way back. And then it's up to progressives and liberals to start picking off conservative Democrats and send them to hell, too. Get rid of them, too. And replace them with real, truly liberal and or progressive Democrats. So just when you think it's time to give up, then something like this happens. So for the third time in a row, Dick Cheney must be just wetting his pants, huh? What do you think? Of course, the downside to this is, as these Republicans are replaced by Democrats, it can only mean one thing, and that is that Cheney and Bush will order up another war. If for no other reason, to bitch slap America. That's all. Just to bitch slap America. Here, give me some more, you young people. Ha! You're going to vote the Republicans out? Well, we can still kill your people. Where are the Democrats? Where are the Democrats in the House and the Senate? Like I screamed last hour, the Democrats could bring this to a stop tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning, they could bring it to a stop. And they won't. Even with the testimony of former Judge Brennan, who worked for this filthy, corrupt administration and now comes back from Iraq and says that the Justice Department has been totally turned into a nest of whores. Not that there's anything wrong, no offense to sex workers, but I'm talking about political whores. The Justice Department, totally corrupted, totally just rammed down the toilet. State Department, totally battered into a senseless, bloody shape of nothing. Treasury Department, don't even go there. How many other cabinet positions can you think of that have been totally corrupted? Quick answer, every single one of them. Myrna writes, Kathy, tell Mike, well, you got to write to Kathy. You wrote to me. Kathy, tell Mike that Google shows Bush went golfing in Arizona the day after Katrina struck New Orleans. If he did, then he's lying about giving up golf in 2003. Bush lies about everything, Myrna. Tell me one thing he hasn't lied about. Michelle in PA writes, Mike, racism is not only in the South, right here in Pennsylvania, the quiet racists. Here's a recent story. This happened a couple, 3 weeks ago. I worked for a furniture store where we are required to greet everyone who comes into the store. During our election date, the Pennsylvania primary, a couple walks into the store, greeted by one of the sales consultants, and was asked if he voted. You know, conversation. Hi, did you vote? The sales consultant's response was, not yet, I will before I go home. And then the woman of the couple stated, good, because we can't let that N-word in the White House. The salesperson then refused to work with this couple, but I was not surprised by what I heard. I'm an African-American woman who has been on this earth and lived in the USA for 49 years, and I expect this. It does not surprise me. I can't begin to think why I would be hated so much. When and if it were not for my ancestors, there may not be a United States of America. Hi, Kathy. Michelle in PA. Indiana, the Washington Post, very interesting article today, starts out about one of the Obama campaign workers, a Danielle Ross. She had a voter call list in her hand. She was talking to Kevin Morita, who wrote this for the Post, and she was talking about how shocked she got from the kind of reaction she got from white people about Barack Obama's candidacy in Indiana. The Washington Post says, in Muncie, a factory town in the east central part of Indiana, Danielle Ross and her cohorts were soliciting support for Obama at malls, on street corners, and in a Walmart parking lot. And they ran into what Danielle Ross calls, quote, a horrible response, a level of anti-black sentiment that none of them had anticipated. Ross, who is white and just turned 20, said, quote, the first person I encountered was like, I'll never vote for a black person. People just weren't receptive, she said. Here's a 20-year-old young person who goes to work for the Obama campaign, and she runs up against white people who kind of, sort of look like her, and all they can do is hit the race thing. Sure, this is America. The article goes on, for all the hope and excitement Obama's candidacy is generating, some of his field workers, his phone bank volunteers and campaign surrogates are counting a raw racism and hostility that have gone largely unnoticed and unreported this election season. Doors have been slammed in their faces. They've been called racially derogatory names, including the white volunteers, and they've endured malicious rants and ugly stereotyping from people who can't fathom that the senator from Illinois could become the first African-American president. The contrast between the large, adoring crowds that Obama draws at public events and the gritty street-level work to win votes is stark. The candidate, Obama, is largely insulated from the mean-spiritedness that some of his foot soldiers deal with away from the media spotlight. Victoria Switzer, retired social studies teacher, was on phone bank duty one night during the Pennsylvania primary campaign. One night was all she could take. It wasn't pretty, she said. She made 60 calls to prospective voters in Susquehanna County, her home county, which is 98% white. The responses were dispiriting. One caller, Ms. Switzer remembers, said he couldn't possibly vote for Obama and concluded, quote, hang that darkie from a tree, end quote. And Rory Kennedy, the daughter of Robert Kennedy, who is a documentary filmmaker, said she too came across, quote, a lot of racism, end quote, when campaigning for Obama in Pennsylvania. One Pittsburgh union organizer told her he would not vote for Obama because he's black. And a white voter, Rory Kennedy said, offered this frank reason for not backing Obama, quote, white people look out for white people and black people look out for black people, end quote. throughout the Barack Obama campaign, some young people are having their first experience joining a cause and meeting cruel rejection. The bigotry has gone beyond words. In Vincennes, Indiana, the Obama campaign office was vandalized at 2 a.m. on the eve of the primary. According to police, large plate glass windows smashed, American flags stolen. Other windows were spray painted with references to Obama's controversial former pastor, Jeremiah Wright. And some stuff I can't say on the radio. Yeah. But in Mississippi tonight, a white Democrat handed a white Republican his exit papers from the U.S. Congress.
You hold the key to love and fear, all in your trembling hand. Just one key unlocks them both. It's there at your
Flying Monkey Right Blues, here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
All right, coming up after the break, we're going to have a moment with Bob. I know you folks love that. As a matter of fact, we're going to start posting, we have this new website now, MikeMalloy.com. If you haven't taken a look at it, check it out. I sent the Home Office about 8 photos, and of course they picked the one that makes me look just rancid. But it's there. I don't care. I really don't care. But we're going to learn all about our new website tomorrow, and very soon now. We've got some things we're going to upload there. What are we going to do? A video once a week, Kathy, and a photograph once a night? Oh my God! That's what the boss wants.
That's the goal.
The goal.
We'll see.
So
as the that's the best case scenario.
Yeah. How long is the video supposed to be?
I think it's supposed to be centered around Uncle Mike's story corner, so maybe 5.
Well, we don't do that often.
But you're going to.
Oh no, I'm not.
That's part 3.
No. There's no.
Speaking of Uncle Mike's story corner, are you going to get to the Pope and the aliens?
Yeah,
I've got to hear this story.
All right, I'll do it right now. It was either that or a moment with Bob, so we'll do the Pope and the aliens. This comes from the BBC. This comes from the BBC. This is not from The Onion. This is from the BBC. You can check it out yourself if you don't believe me. Writing in the Vatican newspaper, the astronomer Father Gabriel Funes, F-U-N-E-S, Funes, said intelligent beings created by God could exist in outer space. Father Funes, director of the Vatican Observatory near Rome, is a respected scientist who collaborates with universities around the world. The search for forms of extraterrestrial life, he says, does not contradict belief in God. The official Vatican newspaper headlines his article, quote, "Aliens are my brother," end quote. Just as there are multiple forms of life on Earth, he speculates, so there could exist intelligent beings in outer space created by God. Keep saying that. And some aliens could even be free from original sin. No! Really? You're kidding! You mean on these other planets they didn't have an Adam, so to speak, and an Eve, so to speak, cavorting around naked, and she said, come here, dummy, take a bite of the apple? And they didn't have a talking snake? What? You're kidding me, Father. Asked about the Catholic Church's condemnation 4 centuries ago of the Italian inventor of the telescope, Galileo, Father Funes diplomatically says, mistakes were made. But it's time to turn the page and look toward the future. Science and religion need each other, he says in his article. And many astronomers believe in God. To strengthen its scientific credentials, the Vatican is organizing a conference next year to mark... The Vatican is organizing a conference next year to mark the 200th anniversary of the birth of Charles Darwin. But if Darwin lives, if his theories are correct, popes and Nazis and priests, then your stuff is utter nonsense. They cannot coexist. Don't you understand that? The author of The Origin of Species and the whole theory of natural selection and so on and so forth that the unwashed like to call evolution, the whole theory of natural selection is prima facie evidence that God was an idiot and couldn't figure out how to do anything. So he just turned his back and walked away and said, "You do it! I'm going to go out here to star system 12X to the 100th power and create non-original sin creatures. Screw you people. Goodbye." Slam. And that was the end of that. They're going to celebrate the 200th birthday of the birth of Charles Darwin. The Catholic Church is going to do that. Quick, Kathy, look outside. The last time something like this happened, a star appeared in the east. Quick, go look. No? Why are you giving me the middle finger? What does that mean? Oh, go look myself. Oh, okay.
Pointing up.
Yeah, I know. You were pointing up. One last thing here before the break. This is from my hometown, my home county, Lucas County, Ohio. County seat of which is Toledo. Joanne Wack, that's her name, W-A-C-K. She is the executive director of the Lucas County Republican Party. Apparently, in 1989, while working as a nanny in Westchester County, New York, in an affluent neighborhood, according to the newspaper in Toledo, she stole sterling silver tableware. This is back in 1989. She was 23 then. She was arrested March 28, 1989, on a felony charge of third-degree grand larceny for taking silverware worth more than $5,000 from a home in which she lived. She was a live-in domestic worker. Now, if you go to the Blade and take a look at this woman, a picture of her, because I know a lot of you are going to say, well, she must be colored. No, she's as white as the day is long. And there she is, the victim of the theft. A woman who lives in Irvington, New York, said that Wack, Joanne Wack, was working as a nanny for her three children. And the woman said Wack took the antique silverware that was stored in her basement and which belonged to a friend of hers whose home had burned down. Now, Doug Heyman, who's the chairman of the party central committee in Ohio, said Wack is no longer, quote, under disability, end quote, meaning she no longer is under punishment by a court and her rights have been restored. Therefore, he said, my understanding is she's done with that. That's in the past. So a convicted felon now runs Lucas County Republican Party. Well, that figures. Why am I reading this? This is not news.
Story in your eyes, it's been shining.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. We're going to do a moment with Bob at the bottom of the hour. I want to get some of these phone calls in here. People have been holding on forever. Reggie is calling from Houston, Texas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Reggie.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great. I don't know where to start. You've gone on so many topics since I first called in.
I know. You've been holding on forever. I'm sorry.
It's been a little while. No problem. So I guess that our blue-collar ethnic white brothers are coming out in force, huh?
Yeah, well, you can't let Barack Obama be president. I mean, my God.
It didn't we just electronically castrate Obama and the Reverend Wright for this very thing, saying that these people didn't exist, and that's not the way America feels?
Tried to. American media tried its damnedest to bring the Barack Obama presidency face-to-face with a brick wall at 90 miles an hour. And, you know, the damnedest thing, it just didn't work. Oh, it may have worked in West Virginia, but it didn't work because last time I checked, the dark-skinned guy is still leading in just every single category, you know, delegates, superdelegates, popular vote, number of states won. Damn, the media just failed in its duties. It was supposed to derail his candidacy, and they didn't. Uh-oh.
Yeah, but it seems like the latest tactic is to just bring him out in force. You know, since it's an undercover tactic, we'll just bring it out just straight up. Let's not cover it up. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah, it seems like that is starting to occur. Polite white people will never let that happen out publicly. Uneducated whites and impolite white people will say whatever they damn well please. And racism is very difficult to confront because it's slippery in certain parts of the country. Here in the South, it's not slippery at all. Here in the South, well, you're in Houston, you know what I'm talking about. In the South, racism is just pretty much in your face, and there's, you know, you can just deal with it or not deal with it. But in other parts of the country, it's a little bit slicker than that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know, Mike. I grew up in Western Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Actually, I was born in Western Pennsylvania, grew up in Western New York. I've lived in Atlanta, so I know what you were talking about Atlanta. You know, it's it's not surprising. When I first got to Atlanta in 79, I was watching TV probably 2 weeks after Christmas, and I see a cross burning on the top of Stone Mountain, Georgia. And I found out that the guy who donated the land to the state had two stipulations, that he could stay on the land, and that they could use it to burn a cross. He was the grand dragon of the KKK.
Yeah, that was old man Venable. He's dead now. When I moved here in 74, he was still alive and kicking, of course. And at one time, his family owned all that acreage that is that Stone Mountain sits on. It's now been turned into a state-run, semi-state-run, semi-private, enterprise-run park, with that huge carving up there of the Confederate generals. But you want to know the funny part? Stone Mountain itself, the population of Stone Mountain is probably at this point about 70% African American.
Yeah, no. Most of my entire family lives there. I moved out here 20 years ago. I was transferred with Honeywell. But you're talking about the people under 35 not having known what this country could be like.
Right.
Because of all of the corruption, the theft, the graft, the murder. But isn't that what Michelle Obama talked about when she said that for the first time in her life that she was inspired? And then she got castrated as well.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. When she made the statement that she made, I thought that was probably one of the most honest statements from the spouse of a candidate. And the spouses of candidates, I don't care if they're men or women, have got to be careful. Especially in the political environment we live in now, because anything a spouse, hell, if they can go back to your preacher 14 years ago, imagine what they can do with your husband or your wife. Take a look at Bill Clinton. Now, Bill Clinton opens his mouth lately only to change feet, but he, you know, everything that he said got full play in media. So Michelle Obama, she's not going to say anything stupid like Clinton did, or overtly anything. So she makes a statement from the heart, And I know exactly what she was talking about. And so do most people. But media in this country pick up on it and turn it into something that it was not.
Right.
So it's, yeah, this is what the Obama campaign is up against. And I think it's going to get, worse. The only thing, I keep hoping against hope that there are enough young people in the so-called millennial generation, which is bigger than the baby boomer generation. My generation is about 75 million. The millennial generation is about 95 million. And those are people who are right now between the ages of roughly 19 and, say, 30, 31. And my hope is, and I've got a son and a daughter-in-law who fit neatly into that demographic. And they are both just ardent Barack Obama supporters. And I believe them when they tell me they don't see his race. I see Barack Obama's race because of the generation I come from. But when my son and my daughter-in-law say they just don't see his race, in a manner of speaking, I believe them. And that's what I'm kind of hoping for, that if this huge cohort that's bigger than the baby boomers, this 95 million plus cohort that's out there now, and they're all eligible to vote, if they will just move themselves to the polls come election day, and most of them are either independents leaning left or Democrats. They want health insurance. They want an end to war. They want to see, they realize what the baby boom, what my generation has given them, which is chaos and near destruction. They want an end to all this murderous crap. And they just may decide to make that desire real apparent by going out to vote. So that's what I'm hoping for, Reggie. I have to tell you, man, I'm hoping that demographic, that cohort, that millennial generation will take hold of this thing and breathe some life back into it.
Yeah, I'm hoping so too, Mike. I'm along with you. I bring up the tail end of the baby boomers. I was born in 61.
Oh, okay.
But you're right, and this is a defining moment in our history where we either stand up and move forward, and I don't know that Barack Obama can solve all of our problems. Of course he can. He's one man. But this is a defining moment where we get to change the course of where we're headed, mm-hmm. or fall back into the same old patterns, mm-hmm. you know, the same fear, the same division, and continue this madness.
Yeah, and I think that's the key element of the Barack Obama campaign that appeals to me and appeals to a lot of people. You're right. He may not be able to change things. He's going up against a monster, and that's the corporatist state. A lot of people say that Barack Obama is not as pure as a lot of us would like to say. I've never said the man is pure. He's come up through Illinois politics. Nobody who comes through Illinois politics is going to be pure. But what I'm hoping, right? I lived there for 4 years, I know. But what I'm hoping is that Barack Obama brings the one ingredient that none of these other people have, and that is his ability to inspire people. And how does
right.
he, you know, a lot of people say, well, it's just a flowery, poetic, empty rhetoric. You know, they didn't say that about Kennedy. And Kennedy's rhetoric, I'm talking about Jack Kennedy, his rhetoric and Obama's rhetoric is about the same. They didn't say that about Jack Kennedy. Of course, it was a different time then. You know, 1959, it was an entirely different time. But
right.
that's what inspires me is simply his inspiration, the fact that this young man may be able to do something that these other candidates can't do. And he may not, but I'm willing to roll the dice one more time.
Yes, so am I. And let me ask you, do you know, is he a member of the CFR?
I don't know. I don't know that Barack Obama is included in any of those councils or organizations that you know, supposedly make grand decisions for the rest of us. I don't know. I honestly don't. Hey, I got to leave you there. Thanks, Reg. All right, we'll talk again. Take care, man. Appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
A couple of emails here from Rick in Mesa, Arizona, regarding the church, aliens, Adam and Eve. Rick says, Mike, you haven't experienced the book of Genesis until you've read it in the original Klingon. Oh, yeah? And Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, writing about Adam and Eve in space. No original sin on other worlds? Well, that's only because we've got all the apples. Mistakes were made, the Pope said. Gee, I thought the Pope was infallible. But all in all, it sounds as if the Vatican is big on SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. I wonder when we'll see Father Funes at the annual UFO festival. You people are not treating that story with the dignity that it... Oh, never mind. Mike, please don't use my name on the air. You can use my initial J. Here are my experiences with racism. We get funny looks when my wife and I go out together with our son. He has my facial features. He said, I spoke to you a few months ago on the phone. I'm a liberal American of Mexican descent with an Irish-American wife. He says, we get funny looks when my wife and I go out together with our son. He has my facial features, but he has my wife's fair complexion, light brown hair. People think I have married my wife and this is her son from a previous marriage. Let's go back further. I remember growing up in South Texas and being called a wetback, and distinctly remember being called the N-word 3 times in my life, twice in Texas, once when I was in the Army. It feels like someone has ripped a very long Band-Aid off your back. Your heart races and you become incoherent for a while. Now, Jay writes, I first discovered, quote, that racism existed when my mother told me a story of the lady that lived down the street from my grandmother's house. Her name was Virtus. We called her Birdie. She was a beautiful African-American woman who was married to a white man. She had lived in the Mexican neighborhood for many years for obvious reasons. I remember my cousins and brothers would go and visit Birdie, and she would give us hard candy and juice. I remember her being a kind and gentle woman who was at peace with everything. How have we come so far in this fight, yet we remain out of reach or out of touch when it comes to race? Jay, I don't know. It is the cancer, though, on the vital organs of this country. There is no question about that. No question at all. Sanchez is calling from Montebello, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Sanchez.
Señor Malloy, muy buenas noches to you.
Back at you.
Well, thank you. I wasn't going to talk about this, but you were just reading the email from that other Latino, and I would like to comment on that if you
don't
mind.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, in my generation, I'm 51 years old, and we're the children of immigrant Latinos that came here either from Mexico City or elsewhere, and too many of us were not allowed to even speak or learn Spanish in our generation because it was a signal of shame. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could go on and on about the Zoot Suit Riots and everything like that, but, you know, we've undergone that for far too long as well, so that was an interesting and quite provocative email you just read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wanted to say thank you. Before I get to the topic of Iraq, the spending bill, I wanted to say thank you to you because every time I talk to you, I keep forgetting to bring this up. Thank you so much for letting Mark Maron come on the show and fill in for you during vacation. It was like hearing an oldies but goodies song that you haven't heard in a long time.
Oh, I know. I hope he'll do that again for me. I really like Mark.
Yeah.
He's got an entirely different style. You know,
mm-hmm.
He's not a talk show host. He's a stand-up comic.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were in Florida, and I just logged on and listened to him for a couple hours one of those nights, and I was fascinated.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I've got about a minute here.
Okay. And thank you for Sophia as well from 9/11.
Sure.
Okay. The Iraq spending bill, $170 billion that the Democrats are playing both sides of the aisle with here. Now, they can either do one of two things, because in a parliamentary procedure, Pelosi and Harry Reid control the schedules of the House and the Senate.
Right.
And effectively, they could stop this entire affair if they did not allow the Iraq spending bill to come to the floor.
Sure.
Now, what they're going to do is they're going to go go home and they're going to say, oh, well, we support the truth by allowing the vote to come to the floor. And then they're going to play the other side of the aisle because at that point they're going to attempt to vote it down. So they get to play at both sides here. The problem with all this, it's all a charade, as you were saying before. The problem, again, with progressive radio is we're becoming too distracted by the elections and all the other things that are out there, and we're completely ignoring this. I mean, I'm glad that you brought it up this evening because nobody is discussing it. I've been calling Farias, who gave me a few topics. I called our local host here, Mario Solis Marriage, that also told me that that is the strategy that must be used, because otherwise, if the Democrats in Congress don't allow, I mean, if they allow it to come to the floor, they're effectively dead in the water. And what do you think they're going to do, Mike?
I don't know. I just wish they would stop playing games.
Yeah.
I wish the Democrats who do control the House and the Senate, not by very big majorities, but they don't need big majorities because they've got the positions of power. If they wanted to, they could stop this madness tomorrow.
But, they sure could.
But
they sure
don't.
Could.
They don't want to, Sanchez.
Jonathan Turley said it best. He said that the Democrats are behaving like that baseball team that continues to sit in the dugout and expects to win the game by never coming up to the mound.
I hear that. Sanchez, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break with A Moment with Bob.
As the nose on your face, there's room in this land for every race. Some folk think that freedom just ain't right. Those are the very people I want to fight. That's why I'm marching. Yes, I'm marching. Marching down freedom's road.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour, excuse me, and once again, it is time for A Moment with Bob. Tonight's episode is entitled The First Crime of This Century. Bob writes, the first crime of the century was when the neocons rode into town in November of 2000 and shot the rule of law right between the eyes. The 2000 election was stolen by the Republicans, approved by the Supreme Court, and supported by mainstream media. The Republican conspiracy to steal the 2000 election. Some people get a rash when you use that word, conspiracy. Okay. The Republican plan to steal the 2000 election has been extensively documented by Greg Palast. Voter suppression and disenfranchisement was carried out and in place well before the election. This is established fact. The core finding of the eight news organizations that conducted a review of disputed Florida ballots concluded that by any measure, Al Gore won. This, too, is established fact. The mainstream media was complicit in the theft by not reporting it. There was nothing we could do. There was no place left to turn. There is no such thing as a super-duper Supreme Court. Republicans nationwide took up as their mantra, get over it, we won, move on. This was the mindset of all the Republicans. To them, it didn't make any difference how their candidate achieved the presidency. By any means possible, regardless of the rule of law, they didn't care. We were supposed to accept that the election was stolen from us and handed to George W. Bush. Our last hope was the Democratic Party. The people, us, thwarted by a corrupted election process, would only be protected if the Democratic Party held in check this rogue administration. At first, the policies of the Bush administration, if not benign, were at least familiar. Gouge the poor and the middle class and distribute the proceeds to, in Bush's words, the haves and the have-mores. You know, my base. We'd seen it before. We endured the Reagan first Bush administrations. We lived to tell the tale. A lot of people in Central America didn't. But if you ignored that, well, maybe we could survive George W. Bush's term in office. We could place our trust in the opposition party and wait it out until the next election. Then we would have the chance to rectify what happened in 2000. And then 9/11. And illegal wars. The election to put right the previous election stolen. The gutting of the Constitution. Authoritarian laws and torture. The list of crimes goes on and on and on. Ron Suskin reported in the New York Times, quote, I had a meeting with a senior advisor to Bush. The aide said that guys like me were, quote, in what we call the reality-based community. That's not the way the world really works anymore. We're an empire now, and when we act, we create our own reality, and while you're studying that reality, we'll act again, creating other new realities, which you can study too, and that's how things will sort out, end quote. And that's essentially what has happened since Bush took office. To paraphrase, when we commit a crime, we're following our agenda. And while you're trying to figure out what crime has been committed and how to investigate it, we'll commit another crime, furthering our agenda. And you'll try to analyze and investigate that. And that's how things will sort out. We'll always be two or three steps ahead of you because you'll be trying to mount an investigation while we are still in power and continuing to commit any crime that facilitates our plan. And now it's May of 2008. More than two-thirds of us disapprove of what the Bush-Cheney regime is doing. We're waiting to see what their next move is going to be. We're hoping that whatever it is, we'll be able to get through the convention this summer to the election in the fall intact. All we've proved is that freedom couldn't protect itself, and we weren't up to the task. At this point, it is absolutely necessary to analyze why the German people allowed the Nazis to seize power and commit atrocities. We have condemned them for decades because they did not rise up and revolt against the Nazi machine. Now we know how it happened. The government and the courts stopped representing the people. The media became the mouthpiece for the ruling party. The opposition party was virtually non-existent. And the people decided that the best course, the safest course, was to wait and see if it would get better. Their plan was to wait and hope for the best. They were kept in line by a corrupted court system, a nationwide spying apparatus, and the constant threat of indefinite internment. Any of this seem familiar? Waiting and hoping for the best didn't really work out very well for the Germans. I guess we'll have plenty of time to work on our own explanations of why we allowed the Bush-Cheney regime to do what they have done, in case someday the rest of the world, the civilized world, asks. Regards, Bob. A Moment with Bob, and interestingly, our writer-in-residence, unbeknownst, Bridget and Bob email back and forth what they're going to talk about, but Bridget writes, Hitler did not lead the German people into one of the most horrific, inhumane periods in history. He arose out of a mindset, a perspective that allowed prejudice and blindness to have an artificial validity that belied reality. I grew up with the mythology. My grandfather was a Jew in Germany during that time. He and my mother and the rest of the family spent a year in a labor camp in Czechoslovakia because they had German passports. My grandfather died there. He survived being a Jew, but not being a German. True leaders, whether light or dark, don't set the course of their times. They step in front of the movement, capture it, and direct it. My hope beyond hope is that Obama has been called by a movement that is truly ready to transcend the ugliness and hatred of the other. that we are ready to tip the teeter-totter to the side where we can stop seeing each other by our covers and begin to read the wisdom we each bring to the table. I suppose I am still an eternal optimist. I just want my Jewish, Salvadoran, Scotch grandkids to grow up in a world where they are seen for their abilities and for their hearts. Bridget. Back to your phone calls. William is calling from Minneapolis, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, William.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hey, William.
Yes, hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I love your show.
Well, thank you.
What I wanted to say is that I work for a large pharmaceutical company here in the Midwest, and let me tell you, racism is still probably one of the biggest conventions we have in our society today.
Mm-hmm.
When I go down south, let me just give you an example of the difference between up north and down south. When I'm dealing with the doctors in the southern region of the United States, you know, when you talk to them over the phone, they think you're white. And so you meet them in person and they find out you're black.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like their whole tone changed. And I have a hard time breaking into that network in the south because of that.
Uh-huh. I would imagine you'd have a bit of a problem breaking into that network anywhere in the country.
Mostly in the southern states.
Well, granted, you know, the south, the southern states are still the south. I mean, there's no way to change that unless, I don't know, if the north and south pole flip and all of a sudden the north becomes the south and the south north. Oh, no, I'm just being stupid. The South is the South, and you're right. The bigotry. You're a black man.
Yes, I am.
All right. The bigotry that you would feel down here would be a lot more overt, I'm sure, than it would be up north. I mean, that's been my experience from observing this kind of the kind of racism you're talking about.
This is one thing I think Senator Obama probably experiencing is that when you have an educated person of color running a state or running the country, it kind of a little intimidation among the white Americans in our country. And I know that just from graduating from an all-white university here in the state of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
It was extremely hard for me to be where I am today, and the hard work that I put into my education to get where I am today, but yet I still have a certain feeling that I can go in my company because of my color.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I understand. I hear you. I don't know if you've picked up on this this story yet, William. You're familiar, of course, with Morehouse College here in Atlanta. And the valedictorian of the 2008 graduating class of Morehouse College, for the first time in its, I believe, 137 or 127-year history, sit down, is a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is great. William, I gotta leave it there, man. Take care. Thanks, William. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
During a war, it just sends the wrong signal.
Oh, my God. 10 before the hour. All right, one more time tonight. I want you to hear that whole soundbite. Chuckle Nuts interviewed by Mike Allen, chief political correspondent for Politico.com. This was an interview conducted, a Yahoo.com internet interview conducted last Wednesday. This is the man who is leading the United States.
Mr. President, you haven't been golfing in recent years. Is that related to Iraq?
Yeah, it really is. I don't want some mom whose son may have recently died to see the commander-in-chief playing golf. I feel I owe it to the families to be as you know, to be in solidarity as best as I can with them. And I think, you know, playing golf during a war, it just sends the wrong signal.
Mr. President, was there a particular moment or incident that brought you to that decision, or how did you come to that?
No, you know, I remember when DeMello, who was of the UN, got killed in Baghdad as a result of these murderers taking this good man's life. And I was playing golf, I think it was in Central Texas, and they pulled me off the golf course, and I said, it's just not worth it anymore to do that.
Oh, my God. Okay, now I'm going to have to set aside Super Beans coffee and get a glass of wine, Kathy.
Nothing like tens and thousands of people dead to just ruin your game, you know?
Yeah.
You know, damn those Iraqis and those troops for just screwing up Georgie's golf game, you know? But he has really sacrificed because, you know, giving up golf is exactly like losing a family member in Iraq. It's the same thing.
For this dumb bastard, it's even worse. All right, we started the program tonight talking to you, telling you about a T-shirt by some redneck dumbass out here in Marietta, Georgia, with a picture of Curious George, which obviously is copyright infringement, eating a banana, the little monkey eating a banana, and then Obama in 08 underneath that. Well, now it's the picture and the story is out on one of the science blogs, Feringilla. Scienceblogs.com is where this is. And the writer is P.C. Myers. He's a biologist and associate professor at University of Minnesota in Morris, Minnesota. And he writes, I was stunned that this T-shirt, could be proudly displayed anywhere anymore. And now, P.C. Myers writes, get this, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is running an online poll that is asking, what do you think of this Obama T-shirt? And there are two choices. It's racist or it's fine. You might be wondering why the newspaper would even have to ask, but here's the kicker. It's fine is winning. Jesus God, Kathy. And I used to write for the Journal Constitution. Ah.
Have you met Sonny Perdue? Who prays for rain with one hand and executes people with the other.
Michael Porter, Michael sent that to me. Thanks, Michael. Thanks to the crew. Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight, answered your calls. Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch is the podcast manager. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Our resident philosopher is Bob Alexander. Our writer in residence, Bridget Wolf. And our military affairs correspondent is Sharon Gordy. Our executive producer is Catherine Bay. And if you haven't become a Nova M founding member yet, would you? And buy one of those Malloy T-shirts. They're union-made, right? And what, they're made in America? They are? Are you sure they're made in America? Okay, and they are union-made. Okay, cool. All right, back to your phone calls. LaShonda is calling from Austin, Texas, listening on the Internet. Hey, LaShonda.
Hey, Mike, how are you tonight?
I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm good. Let me come in the house. It's kind of hot out here. Okay. Yeah. There's so much I want to talk about, but I will be brief as I normally am.
Well, you got 2 minutes and 15 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's see. First of all, I'm doing better than last time I called.
Well, that's good.
Champy sent the check, so I got a chance to upgrade the turkey. Appreciate that. Next. Yeah. The wedding that was here in Texas, because Crawford's not that far from Austin. And
did you get invited?
They didn't invite my ass.
They had lost your invitation?
I guess so.
I'll be damned. I told them to invite LaShonda from Austin, Texas. You mean they did? It just must have got lost in the mail.
Must have. Yeah, the girls. I was reading the paper and then I saw like the footage of Chimpy and the girl dancing and
uh-huh.
Oh my God, can you imagine having that fool as a father-in-law?
No. No. Can you imagine if the young Bush girl has a woman has a child, and the child is like two or three and starting to retain memory, and the young Bush woman takes her son or her daughter and says, "This is your grandfather, the mass murderer." What I mean, can you imagine what the grandkid is how, what's he going to do or she when he or she sits down in, like, I don't know, 10th grade history class and reads what his grandfather did?
Right. They already be picking on people who, you know, don't have on the right clothing labels. So I couldn't even imagine having that as a grandfather.
No, I
can't
either.
Next, the Hillary Clinton thing, I want to just comment on that, her win. You know she's not going away, Mike. I sent you an email yesterday about this.
I read it.
Hillary is not going away.
Right.
I can guarantee you she's going to come back bigger and badder as an independent. The pantsuit is coming back.
Yeah, you said she was going to run as an independent if she doesn't get the Democratic nomination.
I believe that.
I disagree with you. I don't think she would do that.
You don't think so?
No, she doesn't have any money. I think Bill's probably getting a little horny. It's either going to become home to daddy or daddy's going to start looking for what's her name again? What was that girl's name?
Which one?
I got to go, LaShonda. We're out of time.
All right, Mike.
All right,
I'll
thanks.
Talk to you later.
All right, we'll talk again. What was her name? Monica, that's right. Can I say horny on the air? I guess. I just did. I said it twice. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers. Thanks for hanging out. Take care, okay? Really, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.